All right, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study. I'm pleased to be here with you today. Thanks for taking your time on this holy day to join with us. I did want to make a couple of announcements before I get started in the class today. We've been talking a little bit about the new podcast that Jono Vandoor and I are putting out called The Kingdom Chronicles. We did record late this week the first episode of that, and it should be posted very soon. It's going to be available in all sorts of places. We'll make sure we put that out there so people can find it. Not only will it be on Truth to You, but we'll put it on various social media outlets, and it will be available on iTunes so people can download it and listen to it on their favorite mobile devices. So I'll read you the teaser for episode one. Now, you're getting an exclusive here because Jono said don't let this out. So he didn't say for how long, though. So I'm going to give it to you today just so you kind of get a feel for what's coming. So here's what it says for episode one. In the beginning, there was a special kingdom. This kingdom differed from all other kingdoms, but alas, the people of the kingdom chose to be like all the other kingdoms and rejected their king. The roots of this rebellion go deep into the past and are reflected in the words of an ancient parable. In this episode, you'll hear the history of the rebellion, you'll hear the words of the ancient parable, and you will learn the beginnings of the monarchy. So we begin with the beginning. That's a good place to start with a monarchy. So that study will be available. Hopefully, it will be released on Monday or Tuesday at the latest. Now, I did want to say, Jono and I were having a conversation about the intro music. We talked about various things, and I told him, look, here's what I have in mind, and I described it as best I could. And he picked up a guitar, because he plays and writes music, and he said, you mean something like this? And he played it, and it was really, really good. So I'm excited that we have original music that Jono Vandoor put together, and so I'm looking forward to this. I'm excited about this series, and it's going to give you something else. If 1.5 hours of teaching on Shabbat is not enough for you during the week, we're going to give you another 45 minutes a week at least with this new series. So stay tuned. The Kingdom Chronicles will be out very, very soon. Speaking of early this week, on Monday, according to the Jewish calendar, beginning Sunday night at sundown and into Monday, is the first of the seventh month. On the modern Jewish calendar, on the Jewish calendar, it's Tishrei 1, which marks on the traditional Jewish calendar Rosh Hashanah, the beginning, the head of the year, the Jewish New Year. It's also the first day of the seventh month is also, as you know, Yom Teruah. Josephus refers to the seventh month as the holy month. So we are entering into the seventh month, the fall holy days, and I'm looking forward to seeing some of you at our Sukkot gathering, October 18 through 20, right here in St. Francisville. So, again, if you're coming, there's no charge, but if you're coming, we do need you to register online. So maybe one of my dear friends would post that link and remind people where they need to go and register. Look, if you've said on Facebook, yes, I'm coming, or if you sent me a note or you wrote it on a napkin somewhere, that's not good enough. Please go to the website, unitedisrael.org, and register so I know you're coming. We have people who are planning food and various other activities, and we kind of need to know who's coming, how many, so please help us out there. Now, last week I closed the teaching with a passage from 1 Chronicles. 1 Chronicles chapter 5, and if you will, let's go there and pick up where we left off last week. I want to start with that particular passage. Today I'm using the Koren text, and I want to read 1 Chronicles chapter 5 in verse 1. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but since he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel, but not so as to have the birthright attributed to him by genealogy, for Judah prevailed over his brothers, and of him came the chief ruler, though the birthright was Joseph's. The birthright was Joseph's. Now, what you'll notice in 1 Chronicles 5 is that we have two groups which are pulled out in the sense of prominence. In other words, we're talking about two major groups, the tribe of Judah and the tribe of Joseph, the sons of Joseph. And we get this indication here that Judah will prevail and have a key role, but Joseph, the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel, inherit the birthright. So we're going to talk about, over the next several weeks, we're going to be focusing on these two prominent tribes. And you might say, well, is one better than the other? Look, it's not that. It's more of who is it who represents a dominance in the history and in prophecy, and that would be Joseph and Judah. These two particular tribes become key players in history as well as prophecy. And so why would I then go back and look at the history and really dig into the history? Because there is a principle which I believe in. And that is, if you want to know what's going to happen, you look at what's already happened. Ecclesiastes 1:9 is very interesting in this regard. Ecclesiastes 1:9 says that there is nothing new under the sun. What has been is what shall be. Now, that idea that if we go back and look at what has happened, I believe we'll be able to discern certain clues that will help us understand what's going to happen. Remember, not too long ago, I talked about Hosea chapter 12. And in Hosea chapter 12, the prophet is using the story from the patriarchal narratives, and he's talking about Jacob. And Jacob has this encounter at a place called Bethel, Bethel. And when he goes to Bethel, he has this encounter with God. And it says in Hosea chapter 12 that there he, meaning God, spoke with us. Now, a lot of translations, as I pointed out, they think this is probably a scribal problem. He's not talking to us. It should say, and there he spoke with him. Right? That makes more sense. He met God at Bethel. There was a conversation. Jacob and God spoke with one another. But the text doesn't say that. It says that he met him at Bethel, and there he spoke with us. The idea is that the events that took place at Bethel go into the future, if you will. And what is spoken there speaks beyond the contemporary day into, I believe, up into our day at this time. So the future is pictured in the past. So I want to go back. I want to go back into the historical narratives, and I know that we know these stories, but it's very important that we go back, because what we're looking for when we're looking at Joseph and Judah, we're looking for certain tendencies and characteristics and story plot that has to do with themes that we find in the prophets, i.e. redemption, salvation, deliverance. And as we go back and we look at these things in the historical accounts, I think you will see that they portray in some ways what's yet to come. So we're going to go back to the beginning. I believe that the stories of Judah and Joseph historically will provide important information for stories that we find prophetically dealing with Judah and Joseph. So today, I announced last week that I would be talking about, begin to go back and look at what I call and others have called the Joseph Saga. The Joseph Saga. Now, Joseph, the story of Joseph historically is contained in Genesis chapters 37 through 50. Now, we meet Joseph before this. We'll talk about all this. But really, the literature that shifts the focus to Joseph begins in chapter 37 and runs all the way to the end of Genesis. What we have then is a major shift in the narrative. So the story of Jacob literally becomes the story of Joseph. Or you could say it the other way. The story of Joseph is the story of Israel. And if we go back and we study this, you're going to see the drastic change. In fact, I'm going to open up by reading Genesis chapter 37. Look at that. See how I just opened right to it? That's a big book. How do I do that? Genesis 37, verse 1. And Jacob, Genesis 37, 1. Jacob dwelt in the land in which his father had sojourned, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. The next word is Joseph. Now in Hebrew, those of you who study Scripture know that the book of Genesis is carried along by a series of a repetition of a phrase. Toledot, ele toledot. These are the generations. And that phrase occurs quite often in the Torah in Genesis. And it indicates a shift in the plan, a shift in our focus. And it says to every reader, now look here. And it begins this one. It's wrapping this. It's easing into the latter part of the book of Genesis. And it does so by saying, these are the generations of Jacob, Joseph. Right? It starts with Joseph. Now, Joseph is the 11th son of Jacob. So we're talking about the Toledot Yaakov, the generations of Jacob. And the most important thing the writer can tell us is one man's name, Yosef, because that's where we're going with the story. Now, you'll recall that Joseph is the favored son of the favored wife. The favored son of the favored wife. He is stacked with favor. And it shows in the story. Now, remember, his mother, Rachel, was barren. And so in order for Joseph to even be born, a miracle had to take place. And he is born miraculously from the favored wife of Jacob. Go with me to Genesis chapter 30. Genesis chapter 30, and I'm going to read verse 22. Chapter 30, verse 22. And God remembered Rachel. Now remember, I told you last week, there are only three people in Scripture that it says, and God remembered them. The first is Noah. The second is Abraham. And the third is Rachel. And God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her and opened her womb. And she conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. And she called his name Yosef and said, Jehovah shall add to me another son, taking away my disgrace. Now, a word that occurs in the Hebrew in this passage is Aleph Samech Pei, and it means to gather. And in verse 24, where it says, may Jehovah add to me another son, the word that's translated add in Hebrew is Yod Samech Pei. So you have Aleph Samech Pei, Yod Samech Pei, and you get three words that occur in association with the birth of Joseph: taken away, add, and gather. Now, these three words that are tied in linguistically with the story of the arrival of Joseph are very important. How many of you know that names have meaning? And quite often in biblical literature, names are associated with one's role that they are to play. So take away, add, and gather. All of these words come together to give us sort of a description of what Joseph is going to be associated with throughout biblical literature. Now go with me to the book of Genesis chapter 49. Genesis 49. And I want to pick up in verse 1 and 2. Now, one of the things that I'm going to be doing over the course of the next several weeks, probably as long as Jehovah allows me to speak and live, is make connections and associations between historical and prophetic and weave those together as we can from the words in connection with the words and on the basis of the words. So when you look at Genesis 49, 1 and 2, and Jacob called to his sons. Now, I'm advancing in the story here to pick up on a key point. Jacob called to his sons and said, gather yourselves together. Ha'asfu. Gather yourselves together that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the Akarit Hayamin, in the last days. In the Akarit Hayamim. All right. So the charge of Jacob, this is on his deathbed, essentially, and he is speaking prophetically. Assemble yourselves, and I will tell you what will happen to you in the last days. Now, what that does is it sets the stage in Genesis 49 to move it from a certain genre to another genre. He's saying what is coming next is associated with prophetic pronouncement. All right? So I want you to think about that. Now, the other thing that I want to say in terms of this particular passage is that where he says to gather yourselves together, in Hebrew, the root word there is, again, tied to one of the words that's associated with the birth of Joseph, asaf, to gather yourselves together. Aleph, samek, pei. You're going to see when we read the story of Joseph, the writer is telling us, pay attention, it has to do, Joseph has to do with gathering, with adding. Okay, it's a clue from the text about the role of Joseph. Now, we'll tell you this as well. If you were to go to the story, the narrative, as we meet with Joseph for the first time, in Genesis chapter 30 and verse 25, I'm not going to read it, but this is sort of a turning point where Jacob determines to go home to the land that God has promised through to his family. Notice that that doesn't happen until Joseph appears in the story. And I would put forward to you today that until Joseph enters into the story of modern times, Israel, in its fullness, will not go to inherit the land that God gave to the children of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's a clue, another clue, that with the appearance of Joseph in the story, then the children of Jacob can go home. Now go with me to chapter 49 and verse 22, Genesis 49 and verse 22. I'm going to read. Now look, but aside from the fact that these are prophetic, the translations are all over the place. It's very difficult to get an accurate translation of this in some ways because there's some poetic phrases and metaphors, and how do you translate it? But here's what it says, Genesis 49, 22. Joseph is a fruitful bough, a fruitful bough by a well whose branches run over the wall. The archers fiercely attacked him and shot at him and hated him. But his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made supple by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there, the shepherd, the stone of Israel. Now, this is a very interesting phrase. Misham roe evin Yisrael. From there. It's talking about Joseph. And it says that from there, the roe evin Yisrael, the shepherd stone of Israel. Now, some people look at this as a messianic passage. So who is this shepherd stone who will come from Joseph? All right, here we go. By the God of your father, who shall help you, and by the Almighty, who shall bless you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that couches beneath, blessings of the breast and of the womb. The blessings of your father are potent above the blessings of my progenitors to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him that was separated from his brothers. Now, if you read the blessings pronounced and the prophetic word that's pronounced by Yaakov, by Jacob in Genesis 49, if you read Joseph's blessing and contrast it with the other blessings, there are two that are really, really interesting, Judah and Joseph. We're focusing on Joseph. Would you say that's a pretty good blessing there? I mean, it really is a wonderful blessing that's given to Joseph. Now, I want to look at one particular phrase in there, talking about all these blessings of the deep and heaven above and the breast, the womb, the blessings of your father, the blessings. Notice it says this, they'll be on the head of Joseph, on the crown of the head of him who was separated from his brothers. Now in Hebrew, that particular phrase, Nazir Echav, translated here, separated, Echav, his brothers. This phrase is very interesting. It's only used one other time in the Hebrew Bible. Here's the Hebrew Bible. This phrase, exactly as I just read it in chapter 49 of Genesis, only occurs one other time in Hebrew Bible about one who is separated from his brothers. And that is in the book of Deuteronomy. Please go with me to Deuteronomy chapter 33. Deuteronomy chapter 33. And I want to pick up in verse 13. Deuteronomy 33:13, and of Joseph, he said, blessed of Jehovah be his land for the precious things of heaven, for the dew and for the deep that couches beneath. Does that sound familiar? That was used in the Genesis 49. And for the precious fruits brought forth by the sun, precious things put forth by the moon, and for the chief things of the ancient mountains, and for the precious things of the primordial hills, for the precious things of the earth and its fullness, and for the good will of him that dwelt in the bush. I love this. Now, a lot of people's mind jumps to Exodus 3, right? The story of the bush. You realize that hasn't happened yet, right? So just think about that. Put that on a shelf. But I love that phrase, of him that dwelt in the bush. Let the blessings come upon the head of Joseph, upon the top of the head of him who was separated from his brothers. The firstling of herds, grander is his. His horns are like the horns of a wild ox. With them he shall push the peoples all together to the ends of the earth, and they are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and they are the thousands of Manasseh. Now, again, blessing is very heavy in this particular text. It's dealing with Joseph. It's talking about choice things, all right? Precious things are given to Joseph. But interestingly enough, at the end, there is something about bringing together the ends of the earth. Joseph will be used for that, and it has to do with Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, these are his two boys. Somehow, it's saying that these two are going to have something to do with a gathering, an assemblage. Now, notice again in this text, like we saw in Genesis 49, the ones, it's translated, separated from his brothers. Again, in Hebrew, that's Nazir Echav. In fact, there's a larger phrase that occurs verbatim in Genesis 49, 26 and Deuteronomy 33, 16. And it's Larosh Yosef Ulachadkod Nazir Echav. Upon the head of Joseph, this idea of being separated from the brother. Now, is separated the right translation? Now, you may be familiar, as I say this, you may recognize something that you're familiar with. When I say Nazir, that's from Numbers chapter 6. Go with me to Numbers chapter 6. I like to get at the root meaning of a word. In Numbers chapter 6, verse 1, and Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when either a man or a woman shall pronounce a special vow of a Nazir to separate themselves to Jehovah, he shall abstain from wine and strong drink and so forth. The idea, Nazir, is you've heard of a Nazirite, a Nazirite vow. A Nazirite is a Nazir. A Nazir is one who has separated himself for a special period, a special time, what I tend to refer to as a hyper-holiness. In other words, there's no commandment against the common person refraining from grapes or wine or grape juice or the seeds of grapes or the leaves of grapes. There's no restriction in that sense. However, a person who chooses to make a very special vow, which is called the vow of the Nazir, is herein held to a higher standard for a period of time. Now, at the beginning of this, and they don't cut their hair, but at the end of it, they do cut their hair and so forth and so on. So the idea is that there is a connection here. And we're going to get into this as we unpack the story of Joseph. But Joseph is referred to in Genesis 49 and Deuteronomy 33 as the one who was Nazir Echav, separate from his brothers. It indicates sort of in Numbers chapter 6, it indicates a commitment, a dedication to a higher than required sense of holiness. So I call it the hyper-holiness. Now, if we want to start at the Joseph saga, go with me back to Genesis 37. Genesis 37. And we're going to pick up as the saga begins. Genesis 37, and Jacob dwelt in the land in which his father had sojourned, in the land of Canaan. These, Ele Toledot Yaakov, these are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brothers, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought to his father a bad report about the boys. He rats them out. That's what that means. If I were doing a modern-day translation, I'd say he ratted out the boys. All right, I'm going to tell you who in a minute. Now, Israel loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat with long sleeves. That's this translation. We'll talk about that. And when his brethren saw that the father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and couldn't even speak peace to him. Now, I want to tell you something about this. They are so upset with Jacob's love for Joseph, his favoritism, and he showered with it. And Joseph doesn't help himself, by the way, in this, but they're so upset that they can't even speak peaceably to him. Like have you ever been so mad at someone that you can't even be nice? That's what this story is about. Now, I want to bring up that he brings a bad report about four of the boys. Now, how do I know it's four of the boys? Generally, there are pictures and paintings and Bible stories, and it shows all the sons of Israel, and they're out, and Joseph runs and tells daddy on them. But that's not what the text says. It says specifically that he is with Bilhah and Zilpah's boys. Now, who is that? It's Dan and Naphtali are the sons of Bilhah, and Gad and Asher are the sons of Zilpah. So he brings a bad report to daddy about Dan and Naphtali and Gad and Asher. These boys are the sons of the handmaidens. Now, remember the other day, last Shabbat, when I demonstrated when Jacob was going into the land and he was concerned about the safety of his family, he puts these four boys and their mothers at the front in case something bad were to happen. Now, you don't think they know that? I mean, they realize, I believe, that their moms are not the favorite. I bet everyone in the tent, or tents as it might have been, knew that Rachel was the favorite. And it's obvious that Joseph is the favorite. Here's what I think. I think Jacob is not very good at hiding the fact that he's got some favoritism going on. I'm not sure he cares to hide it. But the boys, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher, are with Joseph, and Joseph brings back a bad report. So I think that's important. We're going to see that these tribal groups, it's important to keep straight who we're talking about. If you read this story and you just say that the other sons, that Joseph told on the other sons, you don't get the full picture. Now, this is the sons of the handmaids. Very important. Now, the Joseph saga is filled with drama from the very beginning. It's It's a wonderful story. It's some of the greatest in all, not just biblical literature, but in my mind, it's some of the greatest stories ever told. We have a lot of emotion in these stories. In fact, in what I just read, there's the word love, the word hate. There's in the story of Joseph, there is lust, passion. These narratives are passionate, you know, as we work through. And Joseph and his mother are both favored, which leads to jealousy, right? And this causes a deep-seated jealousy in the boys, a resentment from the rest of the family. But nonetheless, Joseph, beginning in chapter 37, begins to take center stage as the Na'ar. He's a young man. He steps in. Every eye is on Joseph. From this point forward to the end of the book of Genesis, Joseph, the one who was Nazir Echav, separate from his brothers, takes center stage. And I like to think about this almost as a great play. We're going to see a changing of garments, just like you would if you were watching a play. Every time you see a change of garments in the story of Joseph, it indicates something very essential to the story. The first garment. Imagine a play. The curtain opens. Yosef, the favored boy, walks up in a garment. Now, people debate, does it mean a colored garment? Does it mean, you know, like stripes like we typically see in depictions of this? Excuse me. Or does it imply a coat with long sleeves? Because in Hebrew, it's kotanot pasim, and that generally pasim has to do with the palm of the hand. So some indicate that it's just a long sleeve coat. No matter what, I like to think of it as a coat of many colors. I think it's gorgeous. I think it's expensive. And I see Yosef walking up to his brothers saying, "Hey guys, look what daddy made me. You see that? Look at this. Look at the colors. Is this beautiful or what?" And they want to whip him down, right? I mean, that's the image that you get. It's a ketanut pasim. Again, clothing is going to pay a big, big part in the narrative. Joseph is, remember, by the way, Jacob gets his blessing through deceit. Jacob does, and it has to do with a garment. So if you were just studying the garments in the book of the patriarchal narratives, you would come away with some pretty good insights. So just as Jacob gets the blessing through deceit with the garment, Joseph, the one with the garment in this story, which indicates favoritism, ends up with the birthright. Now, I mentioned in the dialogue last week, and I think it should be noted, that there's only one other time where we get the phrase ketanet pasim in the Hebrew Bible, and that's in 2 Samuel. So go with me to 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel and chapter 13. 2 Samuel 13. Now, the entire story I'm not going to read, but it runs from verse 7 through 19 of 2 Samuel 13. I just want to pick up with verse 18. In Hebrew, let me look at something here. 13, 18. Ketonet pasim. Yep, here it is. And she had a long-sleeved robe upon her, for with such robes were the king's daughters that were virgins appareled. Now, the story here is about Tamar. Tamar, remember the story that involves her being abused by her brother. He wanted her very badly, and he takes her by force. It's a very very sad story. And the Bible doesn't hide the bad things that people do. So if you read 2 Samuel chapter 13, you'll get this idea that Amnon, the son, one of the sons of David, wants badly to have his sister, and he plays like he's sick and requests that she come make food for him. And when she brings the food to him, he forces himself on her. So now, what does that have to do with this story? The only thing that I bring it up for is that here we have in the biblical literature only two examples of this ketonet pasim, this special robe. And in both cases, interestingly enough, it has to do, it's in the story, there is a leading to an abuse of a sibling. But if we look deeper, we also see that it has something to do with recognizing the status of the wearer as someone who is elevated. So in the case of Tamar, she is wearing a coat like the virgin daughter of a king. Ironically, she's raped in this garment. It's almost as if outwardly there is an image, a picture of something which denotes who this person is, and the story depicts the enemies of that position. Okay? And we'll leave it at that for the time being. Joseph, back to Joseph, is a dreamer like his father. He has a gift. Early in the narrative, we get the impression that he's not mature in his gift yet, if I can say that. He has dreams, and you know, sometimes I think it's better if one does not share the details, the full details of their dream with others, because it quite often doesn't come out right. You ever experience that? You have an idea, you know what it means on the inside, but when you seek to verbalize it, it comes out the wrong way. And so it is with Joseph. Go with me to Genesis chapter 37. Genesis 37, and I want to pick up in verse 5. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren, and they hated him even more. Now, here's why. Here's the dream. And he said to them, "Hear, I pray you, the dream which I've dreamed, for behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright, and behold, your sheaves stood around about and bowed down to my sheaf." And his brethren said to him, probably not sweetly, "Shall you indeed reign over us? Shall you indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dream and for his words. I believe that this particular dream, though it does speak of Joseph's rise to prominence, I think it says even more. I think it gives us an indication of in what way he will be brought up to the position that is described in the dream. Not only does his sheath stand up and others are bowed down, but it has to do with food. It has to do with the salvation ultimately. But see, that's not, if he would have said, "Look, I had this dream. It had to do with this, with wheat, and you guys came to me and I helped you." So that sounds a little different, doesn't it? Then my sheaves stood upright, your sheaves were on the ground. I think that it has to do with his role that's going to later become evident. Now look at the next, look at verse 9. "And he dreamed yet another dream, and told it to his brothers, and said, 'Behold, I've again dreamed a dream.'
And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars bowed down to me. You can tell this isn't going well. And that's not the way you started off with these guys. They don't like you. And he told it to his father and to his brothers. And his father rebuked him and said to him, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow down ourselves to you to the earth?" And his brothers envied him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Very interesting. Again, his dream has to do with others bowing down to him. And he doesn't hold back. I mean, he lets people know, "Look, I had this dream and I have to tell it to you." I've actually experienced, not to this degree, but I have four sons and I have grandsons. And there are times where I pull one of the younger ones away and I'll say, "Look, you can't see what I see. When you do that to your older brothers, they're going to hold you down and beat you. I'm telling you." In other words, you notice things and you try to interfere. But siblings sometimes do this, and they don't know in their innocence. I think Jacob, he pulls it. You know, he keeps this in mind, but he witnesses this. The brothers don't respond well at all to it. Now, in the next part of the story, again, I want to lay the historical because I think it's important to work through this. We'll talk more about it in the dialogue and then unfold it more in coming weeks. The next part of the story is interesting. If you look at verse 12, his brothers went to feed their flocks in Shechem. Now, by the way, Shechem plays a very interesting part in the story of Joseph. Later, he's buried there. When he does die, he's in Shechem. So I want you to think, we know the story. Joseph is going to a place as the younger brother who's not respected. He's going to a place that his descendants will ultimately rule and own, but not yet. So he goes there to Shechem, and Israel said to Joseph, "Hey, don't your brothers feed the flock at Shechem? Come, and I will send you to them." And he said to him, "Here am I." And he said to him, "Go, I pray you, see whether it's well with your brothers, well with the flocks, and bring word to me again." Now remember, his brothers can't speak well to him, but he's asked to go check on their welfare. Interesting play. So he sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. And a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field. The man asked him, saying, "What do you seek?" And he said, "I seek my brothers." I think this is beautiful. I think it's prophetic. "I'm looking for my brothers," he says. "Tell me, I pray thee, where your flocks feed." And the man said, "They are departed from here, for I heard them say, 'Let us go to Dothan.'" And Joseph went after his brothers, and they found them in Dothan. Now, I want to tell you something. How do I bring prophecy in here? In Shir HaShirim, in the Song of Songs, there is a story about a returning one. And one of the things that comes up is there's a question, where do they feed the flocks? And it's talking about a reunion of God and his people. And in the Hebrew, in Shir HaShirim, it says, go after the footsteps of the flock. Bikve Hatzon. So Joseph is seeking his brothers. Beautiful, poetic. It also applies prophetically. But he's looking for his brothers, and he's told, "I think they went to this place." Now look at verse 18. "And when they saw him afar off," they see him coming. "Even before, when he came near to them, they conspired against him to slay him." They're plotting his death as he walks up. "And they said to one another, 'Behold, the dreamer comes. Now, therefore, let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say an evil beast has devoured him, and we'll see what becomes of his dreams. And Reuven heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. And Reuven said to them, shed no blood. Cast him into this pit that's in the wilderness. Lay no hand upon him, that he might save him out of their hands to deliver him back to his father. And it came to pass, when Joseph was come to his brother, that they stripped him of his coat, the long sleeve coat that was on him. They took him, cast him into a pit. The pit was empty. There was no water in it. They're plotting. They see him coming. They're said, let's kill him. Reuven, I think, just trying to understand the psychology of the story, I think Reuven sees an opportunity to maybe bring himself back into favor with the father. Because he knows that Joseph is a favor. He's already lost his place of honor with the father as the firstborn. This says a lot, A, for Reuven. We're all down on Reuven. But he's trying desperately to get back into his father's love. He's lost out. But he says, look, let's not kill him. Let's just throw him in there, because he's got a plan that later he'll come get him out, bring him back to the father and say, look, I brought your son. I think this is the way you have to understand the story. Now, verse 25, after they do this, they sit down to eat. It's like they don't even, they're just eating. They're fine with this. And they lifted up their eyes and looked. A company of Yishmaelim came from Gilead with their camels bearing gum, balm, ladanum, and they're going on the way to Mitzrayim, to Egypt. And Judah says to his brothers, what profit is it if we slay our brother? Now, notice now, Judah's now entering into the discussion to save Joseph, all right? And what profit is it, and conceal his blood? Let us sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hands be upon him, for he's our brother in our flesh. And his brothers hearkened to him, and then there passed by Midianites, merchants, and they drew and lifted Joseph out of the pit, sold Joseph to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver, and they brought Joseph into Egypt. All right? Now, in the meantime, Reuven, who must not have been in the immediate area when this transaction takes place, he goes to the pit and he finds it empty. He's panicked because he meant to save him and now he's gone. Now look at verse 29. And Reuven returns to the pit. Behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. He returned to his brothers and said, The child is not, and I, where shall I go? Now, one of the main points of today's class, covering this introductory material, is to introduce you to a phrase that is associated with Joseph, because we're going to look for clues. Remember, he's Nazir Echav, he's separated from his brothers. Here, we're given the second one that's essential, especially as we work into prophecy. It says, he's not. Hayeled enenu. The boy is gone. Actually, it literally means in the boy is not. He's not. This phrase occurs in several passages. I want you to go with we're just going to touch them so you see that he now becomes known as the boy that's not. Go to Genesis 42. Genesis 42 and verse 13. I don't want to give away the context. I just want to give you the phrase. And they said, your servants are 12. We are brothers, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. Behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not. It says in Hebrew, V'ha'echad enenu. The one is not. Now look at verse 32, same chapter. We are 12 brethren, sons of our fathers. One is not. And the youngest is this day with his father, our father in the land of Canaan. Look at verse 36. And Yaakov, their father, said to them, you have bereaved me of my children. Yosef is not. And Shimon is not. Remember, Shimon is left. We'll get into that. And then chapter 44 of Genesis, verse 31. It says, now therefore, when I come to your servant, my father, and the lad is not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life, it shall come to pass when he sees the lad is not with us, that he will die, and your servants shall bring down the gray hairs of your servant, our father, with sorrow to Sheol. So this idea of the one who is missing is often associated with Joseph. Now, back in chapter 37, verse 31, and they took Joseph's coat, they killed a kid of the goats, dipped the coat in the blood, they sent the coat with long sleeves, the kotanot pasim, and they brought it to their father and said, we found this. Know you whether or not it's your son's coat or not? And he said it. He knew it. He said, it is my son's coat. An evil beast has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces. And Yaakov rent his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, I will go down to my son mourning in Sheol. Thus his father wept for him. The Midianites, meanwhile, sold him to Egypt to Potiphar, Pharaoh's chamberlain, a captain of the guard. Jacob, when he sees the coat, he understands that Joseph is dead. Now, meanwhile, imagine this play being acted out on stage. Joseph is weeping, refused to be comforted. And the curtain closes with him incontrollably sobbing. And it opens back up and you see the caravan bringing Joseph to Egypt. He's not dead. He's thought to be dead. Hayeled enenu. The boy is not. But he's not dead. The story shifts in the Joseph saga. The favored one, born of the favored one, miraculously, the name Yosef indicates the purpose for which Joseph comes into the story. In fact, as I pointed out, from the time that he enters the story, only then does Israel go home to the promised land. Separate from his brothers, Nazir Echav, he becomes known as the one who is separate from the brothers, the one who is not. Jealousy and hatred of the brothers become front and center in the story. This dreamer, who's now on his way to Potiphar's house, is given a glimpse through dreams of what it is that he is to do in life. He's stolen away from his home, from Dothan. And remember now, in Dothan, he's in the area of Jezreel. Now remember, the story of Jezreel plays prominently in the story, the prophecies of Hosea. His first descendant, his first son is called Jezreel. God will scatter. Joseph going into Egypt is a picture of this. So Joseph is thought to be dead, referred to as Enenu, and so it is for Joseph's descendants today. when Jacob hears that his son, believes that his son has been killed, says that he begins to weep and sob uncontrollably, it specifically says he refuses to be comforted. Go with me to Jeremiah 31. Jeremiah 31. Jeremiah 31 and verse 15. Verse 14, I'm sorry. Thus says Jehovah. Jeremiah 31, 14. Thus says Jehovah. A voice is heard in Ramah. Lamentation and bitter weeping. Rachel weeping for her children. She refused to be comforted for her children because he is not. And they knew. Just like Jacob weeping for Joseph, Rachel prophetically is also seen weeping for Joseph. Just as Joseph refused to be comforted, so in this prophecy, Rachel refuses to be comforted. Just as in the story in the Joseph saga, he is referred to as Enenu, so in this prophecy is he referred to as Enenu. Just as in the Joseph saga, he's not dead, only thought to be dead, so it is in the prophecy in Jeremiah. Now, I'm telling you that if you read only verse 14, Rachel weeping uncontrollably, inconsolably for her son who is not, you would think the child was dead. We're going to get into this as we work through forward. Notice the next verse. Thus says Jehovah, keep your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for your work shall be rewarded, says Jehovah. They shall come back again from the land of the enemy. There is hope for your future, says Jehovah. Your children shall come back again to their border. If Joseph, when Joseph was not, if someone could have told Jacob, refrain your voice from weeping, father, because the son you think is dead is not dead. He'll come back. It would have made a difference. But he didn't know. So too, people who read these prophecies assume that this speaks of the death of children. But the truth of the matter is, it doesn't. In context, it deals prophetically with the historical reality of Joseph and the descendants who were taken captive. But the voice of Jehovah says, stop crying. Joseph, the descendant, by the way, Rachel, it says she's weeping for her sons. Her sons, we know who her sons are. He says, stop crying. They're coming back. And that's where we'll pick up next week in the story of the Joseph saga. Shabbat Shalom.